appreciate everybody coming this night, this evening of Yom HaTzmut. Thank you everybody for coming. I'd first like to thank Jan Belvin for, Jan Belvin for arranging the refreshments for this evening. Thank you very much. A good black, blue and white cookies for the occasion. Thank you. Also like to welcome Rabbi Enten, who is here from the Phoenix Hebrew Academy, Rabbi Goldman, who is here, Rabbi Holland and Rabbi Landesman were here earlier. They have to go, but Rabbi Goldman is here to represent the Phoenix Community Kollel, as well as Rabbi Dubitsky and Rabbi Rabibo, who are here from the Beth Joseph congregation. We also like to thank tonight's lecture is under the aegis of the Legacy Heritage Fund, the community initiative from the half of the Yeshiva University Center for the Jewish Future. The representative here is Rabbi Levi Mostavsky, who is not in the room right now, but he is the one who coordinated this entire evening, from the source sheets to the speaker to the whole to the event to the venue. Everything was put together by Rabbi Mostavsky and by the Center for the Jewish Future. We appreciate all of their help. Tonight's speaker is a good friend of mine, somebody that I've known for quite a while already. He has some stories of me as being his camper. If you'd like to talk to him a little later about that. He is currently moved up from his role as counselor in Moresh HaKollel to be the special assistant to President Richard Joel, as well as the Rebbe in the Stone-based Medrash program. Additionally, he is also the Bochin, the person who does the admission testing for the Mezer Yeshiva program of Yeshiva University, as well as for the Smicha program of Yitzhak Elchanan Theological Seminary, all of Yeshiva University. So it's my pleasure to introduce this evening our main speaker, Rabbi Ezra Schwartz.
First of all, thank you all for coming, and I wish you a Moadim L'Simcha. I wish you a good Yontiv, a happy Yom HaTzma'ut. I really want to thank Rabbi Gross, and I just want to tell all of you how fortunate you are to have a rabbi like Rabbi Gross. This is a man who is just a gem of a person, a true mensch, and I'm sure that I've known him for a few years, and I like him, I respect him, I know he's going to do wonderfully, and you will get to know him and love him as well. We mentioned in the previous learning session, we discussed how one of the elements, one of the special attributes of the land of Israel is it's the only place where we truly form kahal. The notion of community is only completely achieved in the land of Israel. Outside of Israel, we're all individuals, but in Israel, we're a full community. And one of the beauties of tonight's session is that this entire Phoenix community, Rabbi Rabibo, Rabbi Dubitsky, Rabbi Gross, Rabbi Enten, we're all here because of Israel, and it's really a tremendous tribute, and it speaks to one of the central elements of Eretz Yisrael. The story is told, I come from New York City, and I don't know if you know this, but sometimes it's hard to find a parking spot where I live. And the story is told of the driver who is driving down the street, and he needs to park, he has an important meeting, and he's a Jew, he's not really a religious Jew, he's looking around, he can't find parking, just can't find a spot. And he's getting frustrated. Finally, he raises his eyes up to heaven, he says, God, you know, if you give me a parking spot now, I'll do anything. I'm going to start attending synagogue regularly, I'll keep kosher, I'll send my children to yeshiva. God, just give me, I'll even give money to Federation. Just give me a parking spot. Suddenly, a limousine, a stretch limo, pulls out. It opens up three spots. The man raises his eyes to heaven again, says, God, no need to bother yourself, it's taken care of. To a certain extent, this story represents the traditional religious Zionist worldview. For 2,000 years, Jews have been asking Hashem, God, we're stateless, we're alone, we're dispersed throughout the world, send us Mashiach. Please, Hashem, send us the Messiah, redeem us, we need it, we need it. Comes Hei Iyar Tav Shin Ches, the 14th of May, 1948, a few hours before Shabbos, so they wouldn't have to violate Shabbos. They sign the Declaration of Independence. They declare themselves an independent state. And how do we Jews react? The traditional Zionist worldview is that we, like that driver, we don't realize that this is the hand of God. We don't realize that what happened with the declaration of the State of Israel, what happened tonight, 59 years ago, is the beginning of the process of Mashiach. Of course, in 59 years, the questions have changed. People used to ask, should we celebrate on Yom HaTzmaut? Huge discussions in the Tshuva Svarim. Huge discussions in the responsa literature. How do we celebrate? Hallel, with a bracha, without a bracha? Is it permitted to establish a Yom Tov? Is it permitted to establish a holiday today? Is it forbidden? Huge discussions back and forth. Should we celebrate? Recently, however, I think the questions have changed. For us, for many, I should say, the question is not should we celebrate, but the question is much more pointed, how can we celebrate? 59 years into the State of Israel, the state is so far from perfect. The levels of Jewish ignorance are astounding. It's sad. It's depressing. There's tremendous problems, deep problems, economic problems, poverty. The society is fractured. We have these divides, Haredi, Chiloni, the religious versus the non-religious, political divides. How many nations in the world have as divided a political system as the State of Israel? Social divides. How do we handle the Palestinian question? What do we do? Just before, people were asking me about land for peace, and it divides Jews in Phoenix, and trust me, it divides Jews in Israel much more. How can we celebrate? Post-disengagement. We gave up Gaza. People now have a sense of disillusionment with the state. Zionism isn't in today. It's post-Zionism. The historians and university campuses are not the friends of the Jewish state. The common notion is that, sure, we won in 1948 because we were superior militarily. They don't realize that the Israeli military archives have been opened. We know how many Israeli soldiers there were. There isn't a single Arab state that's yet opened its archives. One-sided history. But people ask questions. How can we celebrate? Religious Zionism, the group that is behind the celebration of Yom HaTzmaut as a religious celebration, developed an entire theology, an entire worldview to answer these questions. The religious Zionist answer is that Yom HaTzmaut, Israel Independence Day, is different than all other holidays. Most of our holidays commemorate redemption, but they commemorate redemption in the past. We say Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, Pesach, Shavuos, even Rosh Hashanah, right? Was Rosh Hashanah after Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim? Okay, the Rishonim talk about that. Maybe if I ever come back to Phoenix, we could speak about it then. But all of our holidays commemorate redemption in the past. Yom HaAtzma'ut, however, is here because we anticipate the future. The religious Zionist outlook is that Yom HaAtzma'ut is a significant day because we celebrate the beginning of the Messianic era. We celebrate the beginning of Mashiach. But let me ask you, let's be frank. How do we know that Mashiach is here? Do we know Mashiach is here? Do we know that Mashiach is beginning? Is there any proof whatsoever that we are now in Messianic times? The story goes that shortly after they established the state, so they built the first zoo in Tel Aviv. And you go into the zoo, and they have in the cage a wolf and a lamb. And every visitor who comes to the zoo sees the wolf and the lamb are in the same cage together and said, oh my gosh, this is the prophecy in Isaiah. This is Vigarza Eivim Keves. It's happening, right? Wolf and the lamb. And they run up to the zookeeper and says, how could it be? You have the wolf and the lamb together. What's going on? So he said, oh, it's not so hard. What do you mean it's not so hard? This is messianic. This is amazing. How did it happen? He said, no, every day we put in a new lamb. Now, that didn't actually happen. That's not how we know Mashiach is beginning. So what are the proofs that the religious Zionist community has to show that Mashiach is beginning? Effectively, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, who was the heir to his father, the legendary first chief rabbi of pre-state Israel, was Harav Hagon Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, a man who was a genius cubed, an extraordinary individual in terms of the breadth of his knowledge and the depth of his love for every single Jew, the depth of his love for the Jewish people, for the land of Israel. And Rav Kook developed a theology about what the Jewish state would be, but unfortunately he passed away in 1935. He passed away before the Jewish state was established. And his successor as Rosh Yeshiva of the Merkaz HaRav Yeshiva, HaRav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, Rav Tzvi Yehuda accepted his father's notions and elaborated on them, developed them even further. And he would quote in his sichot, in his talks, he would mention that there are two proofs that the state of Israel is the beginning of the Messianic period. First of all, the Gemara, the Talmud in Sanhedrin on Daf Tzadi Ches, page 98. The Gemara speaks about many proofs, many ideas that indicate that Mashiach is here. But one, and only one, is termed by the Gemara Ketz HaMegula, the revealed notion of the end of days. What is that? It's based on a pasuk, on a verse in Yechezkel, Va'atem hore Yisrael, an pechem titenu, per yechem tis'u la'ami Yisrael. Mountains of Israel, your branches will bring forth fruit. Rashi there comments that when you see the desert beginning to flower, that's when you know Mashiach has arrived. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. For almost 2,000 years, most of the land of Israel was absolutely barren. Comes along the Aliyah Rishona, the Aliyah Shniya. We build communities like Rishon LeZion, 1881, 1882. We're building these communities, and the desert begins to bloom. Right? People are singing songs about eucalyptus trees. Right? Who would have guessed? Right? The land is blooming. Rav Tzvi Yehuda said, this is the proof that it's the beginning of Mashiach. There was so much pride in the Jaffa orange. There was so much pride in Esrogim from Eretz Yisrael. Rav Kook himself wrote a whole book, how it's preferable to buy Eretz Yisrael Esrogim, despite there were many questions on the kashrus of such an Esrog, because perhaps it was grafted. Rav Kook wrote a full book. It's preferable to buy it. And part of that argument was, it's the beginning of the Messianic period. That's the first argument of Rav Tzvi Yehuda. We know Mashiach has arrived because the desert bloomed. But there was a deeper argument that he began to make in later years. And the argument was, if you look in the Rambam tells us, when he first describes who Mashiach is, he says, Mashiach will be someone who is Mekabetz Nidchei Yisrael. Mashiach will bring in the dispersed Jews from everywhere. And the state of Israel is established. 900,000 Jews from Arab lands arrive in the early 50s. In our own time, we've seen another 1.5 million Jews arrive from the Soviet Union. This is Kibbutz Golios. This is ingathering of the exiles. The only significant exile that remains is right here, is North American Jewry. European Jewry is dwindling. It's only North American Jewry. There is not today a single persecuted exile. Reb Tzvi Yehuda Cook said, this is the proof that Mashiach is here. Now, we have to be careful. Mashiach is here, but he's not here in its full splendor. Reb Tzvi Yehuda would always point to a Yerushalmi on the first Mishnah, right? There are two Talmuds. There's the Babylonian Talmud, which we usually study, but today we're speaking about topics of Eretz Yisrael, so we should quote something from the Talmud Yerushalmi, from the Jerusalem Talmud. The Yerushalmi, first page in Brachos, comments that the way Mashiach will come is kim akima, slowly, little by little. Reb Tzvi Yehuda said, yeah, Mashiach began with the flowering of the desert, with the ingathering of the exiles, but we haven't yet arrived at Mashiach ben David. We haven't yet had that one person who is a descendant of David to embody all the attributes of Mashiach, but the process began, and with that, for that, we should celebrate. My impression is that Reb Tzvi Yehuda Cook's approach deserves careful consideration, but I don't know if the flowering of the desert and the ingathering of the exile, if that's a reason to celebrate today. Why should I celebrate on Hay or Vav Iyar? Why should we celebrate something that commemorates the signing of the Declaration of Independence for Israel? Remember, the desert flowering happened pre-state. The ingathering of the exiles, is it directly connected to the declaration of the state? We could debate that. But why should we celebrate Hay Iyar? It seems to me that Reb Tzvi Yehuda Cook's approach doesn't adequately address that. So, there's another approach, which I think deals with celebrating Hay Iyar. It was formulated by my teacher and Rabbi Gross's teacher. Happens that's the same person. Rabbi Herschel Schachter is our Rebbe in Yeshiva University in New York. And in his Sefer, in his book, the book is called Be'ikvei Hatzon, he points out a totally different approach for why we should celebrate Hay Iyar, but it's also messianic. Rav Schachter argues, and there are others who argue in a similar vein, that the very fact that there's a government for the state of Israel is the beginning of the messianic process. Jewish sovereignty itself means that Mashiach is beginning. That's a bold claim. That's a bold claim. We have a government. Government is political. Generally, I don't know about you, but when I look at politicians, I don't see godly individuals. To assume that we should have a religious celebration because of a political act of declaring the state, it's a little bit questionable. But let's listen to Rav Schechter's argument. Rav Schechter contends that today's state of Israel is called Askalta de Geula, the beginning of the redemption, because, he says, we have to properly understand what Geula is. What does the term redemption mean in Judaism? Take a look at the Ramban in his introduction to the book of Shmos, to the book of Exodus. The Ramban over there explains that, you know, each book in Chumash has its own name. The book of Bereshit is called Sefer Yetzirah, the book of creation. I understand that, right? Bereshit is about the world being created, And then it's about a group of people, right, who bring that creation further. It's the beginning of the creation of the Jewish people. Okay, Bereishis is about creation. Shmos, the Ramban explains, is the book of Golos and Geula, the book of exile and redemption. Now, Golos I see in Shmos. You read Chumash Shmos, the Jews are slaves in Egypt. The exile, I got. Redemption, I would say, well, redemption is easy. We get out of Egypt. Okay, but then it doesn't account for the entire book of Shmos, because that's just the first half of the book of Shmos, or not even the first half, the first three parashios, four parashios maybe. What happens after we leave Egypt? We're still in the book of Shmos, but then we build the Mishkan. Then we build this special sanctuary for God. And the Ramban comments that Geula, redemption in Jewish tradition, means building a sanctuary for God. Construction of the Mishkan is the culmination of Geula. That is what redemption means. So now, that's very nice, Rabbi, but we're talking about the modern state of Israel. We're talking about a modern government. What does that have to do with building some tabernacle in the desert or building some Beis HaMikdash? Well, the answer is, Rav Shechter contends, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that there are three mitzvos which the Jewish people do, and they have to do them in that order. Lahamid lohem melech, establish a government, appoint a king. Lahachris zaro shal amolek, to destroy evil in the world, to destroy Amalek. And then, livnos beis habechira. Then and only then do you build the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Shechter contends that establishing a government is the first stage in building a Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, not only is there an opportunity to rejoice, but there's an obligation to do so, because we now have an opportunity to move to stage two, to destroy evil from the world, and then we can move to stage three and build that Beis HaMikdash. And we have obligations to rejoice for any stage involved in building the Beis HaMikdash. Hey, ER, tonight is the first stage in that process, and that is why we rejoice. This approach, I don't know if you say it in this show, Rabbi Gross, but in the Tefillah L'Shalom HaMedina, so there is a line which reflects this approach. Right, we say, our Father who are in heaven, right, Tzur Yisrael v'Goalo, Barech es Medinas Yisrael, bless the Jewish state, Reishis Tzmichas Geulaseinu, the beginning of the flowering of our redemption. That expression reflects this idea. Now, I have to be honest. There are many versions of the Tefillah Shalom HaMedina. The British version of the Tefillah Shalom HaMedina does not have that line. Many Gedolei Yisrael, including Reb David Lifshitz in our yeshiva, and Reb Moshe Feinstein is reported on the blog Herhurim as having subscribed to this approach as well. They amended the text to say Shetehe Reishis Tzmichas Geulaseinu. It's a prayer. It should be the beginning of our redemption, but we're not so sure. But the fact is, the standard prayer that we say for the state of Israel reflects this idea that the state is the beginning of our redemption, because having a Jewish government is the first stage of building a Beis HaMikdash. My personal feeling is that I'm uncomfortable speaking about the state of Israel as being messianic. I know my Rebbe said it, and certainly it's a wonderful approach, but it seems theologically overambitious. Look at the Ramban. The Ramban, who's known as the greatest authority about Mashiach, right? That's why Lubavitchers, who study Mashiach a lot, they study Ramban. The Ramban tells us that there's much about Mashiach that we don't know, Will Mashiach come before the war of Gog and Magog or after? The Rambam says, I don't know. To assume that we do know that this state of Israel is the beginning of Mashiach, I'm hesitant. Moreover, I'm a little bit concerned because historically we have not done well with messianic movements. The history of messianism in Jewish history isn't a pretty one, from Shabtai Tzvi to the Frankists. It's not pretty, and it makes me take pause before declaring something as the beginning of Mashiach. Of course, contemporary events also have caused a lot of questioning of Mashiach. You see, if I tell you that having the state of Israel is Mashiach, and we're 59 years in, and we just gave back Gaza. So people say, what's going on here? How could it be Mashiach? You're giving it back. This notion of messianism led to tremendous, tremendous disillusionment among the settlers. Much of the religious Zionist camp lost a lot of their faith in the state because they were trumping the Mashiach card so much. If you talk about Mashiach, right, the Protestants have a term they call already, but not yet. No? He's here, but not yet. Right? And the religious Zionist camp is living in that world, and it leads to serious problems because if it's already but not yet, you ask the question, well, where is he already? So what I would like to suggest this evening, and this is why there's a question mark in the title, Israel Independence Day, beginning of the ultimate redemption, question mark. The question mark is because, honestly, I think there's room to question. But even so, even if we question the messianic underpinnings of Yom HaTzma'ut, I think there's good room to celebrate. Let me explain. In 1956, at a Yom HaTzma'ut celebration, Rav Soloveitchik, who is the rabbinic leader of the modern Orthodox community, even today, 14 years after his passing, he's still the leader. Rav Soloveitchik spoke about Yom HaTzma'ut in a book that's titled Kol Dodi Dofeik, Behold, My Beloved is Knocking. It's based on the psukim, the verses in Shir HaShirim. If you remember, the beloved is looking at night for his lover, and he's going through the dark alleys, and he's knocking on the doors, and he knocks and he knocks, and she says, listen, I'm wearing my pajamas, I can't get up, I'm not going to do it. And he's knocking. Finally, she decides she'll get out of bed, she'll go, she'll answer the door. Vidodi chamak avar. And by the time she gets there, he's gone. And Rav Soloveitchik, in his speech of Kol Dodi Dofeik, he mentioned six reasons why the religious community should embrace Yom HaTzma'ut. And of these six reasons, he does not mention anything. He does not mention the word Mashiach a single time. I want to focus with you on three reasons that Rav Soloveitchik gave. We'll elaborate on them a little bit. And I think this gives us reason to really celebrate tonight. The first is political, second, spiritual, third is what I will call theological. Politically, having the state is important because Jews have a place to run. If we're persecuted, we have somewhere to go. But there's much more to it. There was a great Jewish historian named Gavin Langmuir, and he wrote a famous article called Majority History and Post-Biblical Jews, which is a survey of all of the history books which are studied in universities. Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik assigns this in one of his courses. And what's fascinating is in all of the history texts studied in universities, there is not a single reference to the Jewish people between the first sanctuary, which is the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and the year 1948, or the events surrounding it. It's as if the Jewish people didn't exist. We were anonymous, and being anonymous is a tragic fate. With the advent of the State of Israel, we matter in the world. You can open the pages of the New York Times, or the equivalent out here, here out west, and barely a day goes by without mention of the State of Israel. What that means is we matter in the world. But in Rav Soloveitchik's terms, it's not just that we matter, it's much more. It means that we are moving from being a people of fate to becoming a people of destiny. Fate is what happens to us. Fate is that we are passive and events from the outside impact on us. Destiny is what we do. With the advent of the State of Israel, we are players on the world scene again. We now are meeting our destiny. The Jewish people were put here on this planet for a reason. Hashem told us, I'm giving you three promises, you'll have children. These children will take Eretz Yisrael, and v'nifrechu v'cha komish b'chos ha'adama, all of the people of the world will become enriched, will become more blessed because of you. We are now able to fulfill these promises because of the State of Israel. This is religiously significant, it's political significance, but it's religiously significant, and this is the first reason why we can celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut. The second knock that I'd like to discuss is the spiritual knock. The State of Israel is the home of spirituality for so many Jews. I don't think it's a secret that there are a lot of Jews who aren't really connected to Yiddishkeit. And in recent years, the organized Jewish community has come up with something which is beginning to work. It's called birthright. What happens on birthright? You take young people between the ages of 18 and 25, if anyone hasn't been there yet, you can apply, and you go to Israel, and you go on a tour, and you see the country. And the studies are beginning to come back about the impact of birthright, and Jews who have been on birthright are 45% less likely to intermarry. That's very significant. Jews who go on birthright have much higher levels of religious affiliation, of observance, of participation in Jewish communal life. Israel does something spiritually. But even more than that, for us in our community, we have to acknowledge the fact that today Israel is really the home of Torah in the world. Someone commented to me, there are probably more gedolim, more Torah giants on single blocks in Yerushalayim than you have in the entire United States. And this, you can't say it's not because of the government, because the biggest supporter of Torah in the world is the Israeli government. The amount of money that they pour into yeshivos is astronomical. Even after they cut it back, it still is tremendous. The fact is, this itself is reason to celebrate. But there's a third reason I want to talk about. Not political, not spiritual. I want to talk about theological reason. Rav Soloveitchik called this the strongest knock of all. The traditional church philosophy is that because the Jewish people rejected Jesus, when he came and we said, sorry, sir, you're not the right one. So therefore, we were condemned to be a people of wanderers. There's a verse in Matthew that says, your house shall be left unto you desolate. The land of Israel is supposed to be desolate. We are not supposed to be in charge of the land. The state has changed this. The state has changed Christian theology. Vatican II, which has done a tremendous amount to help Klal Yisrael, right? The church which has been a terrible, terrible enemy of Jews for thousands of years, is better now. Pope John Paul made major strides in Jewish-Christian relations. And it's all because they had to come to grips with having the state of Israel. We're no longer guilty of deicide. We are now elder brothers. And when you think about it, and you realize that one of the world's largest religions had a complete v'nahapohu, they had to change the entire thing. Why? Because of the state of Israel. Holocaust, which led to the state of Israel. That's what led to the entire Catholic religion changing. For us, that's very significant. This is a victory. This is a victory of what we believe in. Now, Rav Soloveitchik was able to view the establishment of the state of Israel as being significant because he viewed human initiative as important. Rabbi Wurzberger, who was the professor of philosophy in Yeshiva University, he was my teacher. Rabbi Wurzberger used to speak about how the Rav viewed human initiative, what we do, as being so tremendously important, and therefore, because it's important, that's why the state of Israel is important, because we did it ourselves. We're supposed to partner with Hashem. We're supposed to establish political institutions which help bring God's work to completion. Now, I realize that to a certain extent tonight I'm preaching to the choir, because the people who come to celebrate Yom HaTzmaut are people who don't need to be convinced that the state of Israel is religiously significant. But I think it's important sometimes to preach to the choir, because the goal is you want the choir to sing. It's not just to believe that's important, but we really should do something. If Rav Soloveitchik's approach, and I think for us it resonates much better, it's important to have a state of Israel, it's religiously significant, but it's not Mashiach-based. For us, this is important because we are now charged with the responsibility to do things. And I just would like to outline three or four things which we should do to connect to Israel better, to connect to the state better. We in Phoenix, or in New York, right? We're not making Aliyah, although maybe it's something that we should seriously consider. But what should we do? And the first, I think, is that there's a sense of consciousness. You open up a newspaper, what are the articles you read first? You read the local events going on in the metro section. You read maybe the national news. Or do you read the news about Israel? Even more than that, though, there's something to be said about realizing that the state of Israel now exists, and that's our real home, and whatever we have here is only temporary, it's only transient. Rav Mordechai Gifter, the late Telzer Rosh Hashiva, at one point moved to Eretz Yisrael, and it didn't work. He had to move back to Cleveland. And Rav Gifter, when he moved back to Cleveland, refused to buy his home again. He rented. The reason was because he always wanted to remember that this isn't my real home. And it's something that we should really focus on. It's important to visit Israel. It's important to learn the language, because that's the future. If you don't already know Hebrew, well, you should learn it. 100 years from now, Jews won't be speaking English. We should learn Torah Eretz Yisrael. It will deepen our appreciation. It will make us better. V'shuv Hashem Ashivas Tzion Hayinu Kechomim. Hashem brought us back. Whether it's messianic or whether it's not the beginning of Mashiach, it's a nes. Nonetheless, it feels like a dream, but that dream has actually become a reality for us. And if the dream becomes a reality, it's time for us to work with that reality and help that reality become our destiny, to embrace the ideas of Israel more, to become more connected through learning about Israel, language, culture, through raising our consciousness.